Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
CinemaSins has a fan club. It's called the Sin Club, and members get all sorts of things like early episodes, bonus videos, merch discounts, and even monthly bonus podcasts. Membership starts at $3 a month, and you can sign up now at patreon.com/CinemaSins.
Yeah. You wrote MIA a letter? That is so awesome.
I actually wrote Nancy Wilson and her a letter, both of them being like,
oh, wow. That's awesome. So those, and apparently you're very convincing.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined by Jonathan Watkins.
Hello, hello.
And Barrett Scher.
Hi there.
And today we have a very special guest. It is director Maureen Barucha, who has made a movie called Golden Arm, coming out in theaters and digital on April 30th. Maureen, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this movie is really funny, by the way. Oh, I laughed several, like many times in this movie.
Right, mission accomplished then, yes.
Yeah. I was wondering, what drew you to this project and how did you come to be a part of it?
Yeah, I mean, one, you know, I'm such a movie buff. I'm so obsessed with movies. So movies is kind of my first love of directing. And when I heard about this project, it was from the writers Amory Allison and Jenna Milley. About 5 years ago, they were starting their script and they approached me because they had seen some of my short films and they asked me if I would do a sizzle to kind of go along with their script as they took it out to get financing. And just the premise alone, that, you know, they were like, Amory actually was an arm wrestler in one of these underground arm wrestling, competition. So
what?
Like
this exists?
It's a real thing. Yeah. All across the country, there are these like underground, we have one here in LA, Los Angeles Lady Arm Wrestlers League. And they arm wrestle for charity and they like wear costumes and it's just really fun.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I need to find this now. I was going to actually, one of my questions I was going to ask was how prevalent these arm wrestling competitions are and how close do you think you got in your movie to the reality of it?
I mean, I definitely, you know, when I came on board, Amory, she was a part of it. She owns a charity in DC or runs a charity in DC called DC Claw. And then I, you know, in particular wanted to reach out to arm wrestlers here in Los Angeles where I'm based. So I talked to Provendenza and they run the Lady Arm Wrestling League and just really wanting to be mindful and respectful of that community and, you know about it and not just kind of go into it being like, oh yeah, this is fun and whatever. I wanted to in particular make sure that we were highlighting different women and the styles and really kind of, you know, showing respect to them. And so that was really important. It's a really cool thing that they're doing. And again, most of it is for charity and it's just like fun times. It's like you get to cosplay. I think Provendenza, their persona is the Bloody Nun. So everybody kind of has their own. Yeah.
Mary Holland and Betsy Sodaro are a great team up in this movie. I'm wondering how you came to cast them as your leads in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, Mary and Betsy are just dreamboats. I just love them to death. Betsy was actually a part of the original sizzle that I did. She, you know, I've known Mary and Betsy for years now, worked with both of them on many projects, whether it was spank shows at UCB. Mary had been in some of my Sprinkles cupcake shorts. So, you know, one, it was, casting this movie, you definitely needed kind of powerhouse comedians that also had acting chops. And so that's like Mary to a T, especially Melanie's character, you know, carrying the movie and having to, you know, have this big transformation. Just internally, Mary is such an incredible actress that, you know, she was kind of just like, oh, this Mary's going to kill this. And then Mary and Betsy have also been improvising together for, I think, 10 years. So they kind of already had a big friendship. Yeah. And
that explains a lot because they are, you can tell that they have genuine affection for each other. They play off of each other so well in this. So no, that makes all the sense in the world.
Mm-hmm. And the movie, mm-hmm. The movie really works because of them. If I think, you know, you at the heart of the movie, I think what the movie ended up evolving into, it's in the end, it's a love story about these two friends finding each other again and kind of going on mm-hmm. this road trip, you know, adventure together. And you really, you know, at the heart of it, it's this friendship between these two women.
I can tell you the first moment that I knew I was going to really like this movie, it's when Danny, played by Betsy Sodaro, says, "Fucking Brenda." I knew immediately that this was going to be a movie for me. And she continues that kind of level comic chops all the way throughout the movie. I had seen Mary Holland before in Happiest Season, where I thought she stole a lot of her scenes in that movie. What is the story with Betsy Sodaro? Because I've seen a lot. I see that she has a lot of voice credits, and that's quite, not surprising because she has a comic voice, but what is her story?
Yeah. Betsy's been in a lot of stuff, and you might not even realize. Yeah. A lot of voice work. She was also mm-hmm. on that. Oh my goodness. My mind is blanking, but that Stoner show on Netflix. Oh my goodness. She's been in a lot of sitcoms. I mean, I think that she was in the pilot of Superstore, and you've seen her face a lot, and she's done a lot of TV shows and a lot of, but to me, what was so great is like both Mary and Betsy getting to be the leads in this movie and really getting to like play out characters that you probably have never gotten to see them play out just because of, you know, getting to be the leads in this movie. And there was nobody else that I think could have done justice was other than Betsy and Mary.
I believe it's for disjointed sure. that disjointed, we were looking
yes.
for.
Yes. And what's so funny is that actually when we shot this movie in Oklahoma, you would never know, but it has the most dispensaries of any place I've ever been. It's like Starbucks.
Ooh, huh.
So because I think it's medicinally like legal. So many people work at dispensaries, and when we'd be out in the town, Betsy got recognized so much from that show. They'd be like, just like, "Hey, you're from that show." It was so funny that it was just like, "Yeah, we're in the land of Oklahoma where there's so many dispensaries."
What else are you gonna do in Oklahoma? To be honest with you, you're gonna get high and you're gonna arm wrestle. I think are really the.
I also gotta say, Oklahoma has some really good food. Like I was really shocked. Like I was.
Oh yeah.
It was some tasty food. You're gonna eat.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You round out this cast with a lot of great character actors. Some people who show up in this movie, Dot Marie Jones, who I remember from Glee,
mm-hmm.
And then you had Kate Flannery, mm-hmm. who's very well known in The Office and everything. I and just a host of other people here. Including Olivia, I think, as Stambulia.
Stambulia, yeah.
Yeah. Tell me how you found these people, and they're all great. They all add a lot of character to this movie.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's so great about the movie is that as I was casting, it was really important to find just different types of people. And a lot of these people I've worked with before, you know, Ron Funches is an old friend and we worked together. So it was like Ron and the same thing with Eugene. Eugene had been in one of my Sprinkle Shorts many, many moons ago. So I was like, I got to get Eugene. And then what's really cool about Da is that she's a real arm wrestling champion. You know, she brought her arm wrestling
She seems like it.
Yes. So she was teaching us, like, she was teaching us really how to arm wrestle and technique. Obviously Kate was so great, but then it was like Aparna and Trilla as a friend that I was like, Aparna, you got to be in this movie. My brother Ahmed, you know, he's on a show on a film called Dream Corp. I was like, you know, I do so much with him. But then like Olivia, she actually ended up sending tape in, and we just saw her tape and we're like, oh my gosh, she's Brenda. Like she sent in such a great, such a great tape. And the same with Don Luby. Like, you know, I'm so surprised we had known each other, but she sent in a tape and her tape was so great. And she was actually, I actually ended up changing the character's costuming because of her tape. She sent in tape wearing a backwards hat and like arm, you know, wrist guards. And I was like, oh, we got this, this character is now a skater. Like that's her person. that was born out of like Dawn's tape that she sent in. She was just so brilliant. So it was kind of a mixed match. Most people I had worked with before and kind of, you know, asking them to join my circus. And then there were a few people that we cast, again, Brenda, Olivia, and Dawn were through tape.
Yeah. I noticed that you were a segment director for Jimmy Kimmel for a while.
Yeah.
And I was wondering how much did you learn on those things? Because you're credited for about 400 episodes on this thing.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy Kimmel Live was a dream job, like such a great show to work on. I was there for almost three seasons. And you know, I was one of four segment directors, and I feel like if anything, I really honed, like, you know, time, how much time you have in the day to shoot something, how to trust your gut, how to make something work in an edit if it's not working in the moment, because you're getting your assignments and you're shooting and you're editing and you're getting cuts to Jimmy like day of before the show goes live at 5. So it's a real scramble and a mad dash to kind of get what you need, make it funny. There were things that we had longer time to do, but it's such a great, great show to work on. And there's such a tight knit group of people that you're working with, you know, different writers, a different editor, a different DP on just different bits each day. So it was so fun. And it's so such a crash course in really kind of honing your skills and trusting your gut.
It almost feel like a relief to be able to shoot this movie without that kind of a pressure, or did you feel yourself like really still needing to have to go? You had like very little time to make this movie.
I think like I don't know if it was a relief because it was, you know, different monster, different.
Right.
But I do think what working on Kimmel really just taught me is, you know, you're always in a crunch there and you're always under the gun. So, and I knew that, you can do anything, right? You're like, we can make it work. We'll figure out a way. So nothing ever felt overwhelming or insurmountable because I was doing it for, you know, almost 3 years on Kimmel where it is crunch time and you got to make it in the wire. You got to make it in your time. Like you have, there's a show that's going to be live at 5. So, you know, I think that it helped. And I'm also just a person that really like loves that kind of stress. I waited when I was younger, and I feel like of it as the kind of waiting tables. Like whenever I would have a section that was, if I was slow, I would forget everything. I'd forget to bring a fork or a straw. But then if you're at a busy, busy table, I would like never miss a beat because your brain just kind of organizes it and you're not overthinking things.
I know exactly what you mean. I had that same thing. Now my job was not nearly as stressful as waiter, but I was a concession worker at a movie theater for a while. And most of the time people could just go, I want this, this, and this. And I would be like, bam, I'd get it out there. No problem. But then there was this one guy who came in who was all like, you know, I want this and this. He was trying to make sure that I knew what it was. And I actually, like, halfway through it, I was like, I don't remember what you asked for. But anyway, Jonathan, you were about to ask.
Well, I always been curious about that because I've been talking about it. That worked on one of those type of talk shows. How many weeks of the year is that? Is that, I mean, that's over 40, right? At least.
Yeah. I mean, it was full time. I think we had, I believe it was like 8 weeks off in the year.
Oh, wow.
So it was, yeah. And it's a 5 days a week. I mean, the show is live 4 days, but then on the fifth day you're working on, so there are four segment directors and you're working on a commercial. So each director kind of rotates through the commercials that we do for the show. So, you know, if you're not, if the show's not live, you're working on edits or you're working on pre-production projects. So, but what's really cool about it, and, you know, looking back on it, it, again, it's such a great show. It's literally probably the best gig in town. Jimmy is so great to work for. But it also is really cool because there was just so many people that you could pass ideas around. You know, hey, watch, come in the edit bay, watch my bit. Or, you know, other directors there, like John Kimmel was a director and Brad Morrison were such great people. Danny Jelnick, that, you know, often directors get to like kind of have that Will Burke. Like you don't have to, you don't get to like interact with directors on a day-to-day basis. So it was cool. And Andy Fisher is the show director. So there are other directors you could talk with or ask advice from and, you know, shoot the shit and just talk shop. Really nice. Cool. Yeah.
You just and the worst celebrity guest was who?
I have foggy memory of that.
You just rattled off a list of names and it sounded like they were all male. What I appreciate about Golden Arm is how female forward it is, if that's not pedantic to say, like how unabashedly, like, you know, we're best friends. We don't need a dude around to you know, take care of our needs or anything like that. As a matter of fact, the men in this movie are kind of supplemental, not to say that they're not great characters. The ex-husband is hilarious.
Real husband, Matt.
Yeah. Oh, really?
So nice. Great. I love the "that's not donut, it's bread." And then she's like, "he's like, donut is bread."
That was their improv. Their improv is like so great.
But no, I just was this intentional to really showcase female comedians and female actresses that wouldn't necessarily, you know, you don't, obviously we don't have a whole lot of cast like this. Was that super intentional?
Yeah, it definitely was intentional. I mean, one, it was originally there in the script. I think I actually added men to the script just because I think so often it's nice to round it out with men. And I think it's great to see allies like the Jerry character I added. And then I cast my brother as that character. I think it's
awesome.
Yeah. Like there just needed to be another layer of comedy there with like, and again, somebody that's kind of like the foil to the women. But I think one of the big things for me is that, yeah, I think I haven't had as an now I'm, you know, definitely I've been a big point to like increase my circle and, you know, support other women filmmakers. But I think growing up, I didn't necessarily have a lot of women to look up to in that way. And I never realized that until now. But that being said, one of the really important things I thought for this movie was it is going to be female forward, but we're not going to talk about it. We're going to show it. We're not going to say it. Like we never, you know, words that I was like, I don't ever want to hear the words female empowerment because I don't want to say it out loud. I want to just show it in the movie. So the same thing with like, when you write a script, you don't want to tell it to the people with words. You want to show it with the action. So it was really important to me for the movie to, we watch it and men and women can enjoy it and you're enjoying the characters, but it, yeah, it's there. It's in the subtext. It's never overtly stated and we're not pushing it in your face and it doesn't feel like a slogan or something that you're making sure that we're hitting. It's just by showing these well-rounded women in different ways that you've never seen, supported by men that are in that world as well. And so I'm really glad that it comes across like that without it being, you know, again, too much of a slogan or over the top or just get what we're doing. We're about female empowerment, which is important. But I think saying it cheapens it in a way.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We got to get real here, Maureen.
Okay.
I got a bone to pick with you in this movie.
Let's do it. Yeah.
This is real serious stuff now. Okay. This is probably not you I should be asking. I probably should be asking the screenwriters. But there is a moment when Melanie and Greg have their date on the baseball field.
Oh, okay.
And Greg says, "I have a guilty pleasure called the natural. I want to know how the natural is a guilty pleasure. I just want to. I can understand hating it, but I can't understand guilty pleasuring it. So defend yourself in five words."
Okay, so I feel like, you know, that is a little mixture of the writers and myself.
Okay.
I think that movie was always referenced as you know, this like guilty pleasure, but we kind of turned it in. Cause I think when you read, like, I think none of all of us had like, when that was in the movie, we're like, let's rewatch that movie and just see how it is again. And like, one, it is a very enjoyable movie, but it's also kind of ridiculous. Like,
yeah, it is. No, there's no doubt about it. It's super 100%.
So what's so great, and it didn't make the cut because I think it went on for too long, but Eugene had rewatched the movie, and so I let those guys improvise just the plot of that movie. And it was like, Lady in Black shoots him, and then he's still bleeding like this many years later. You know,
I would love to see the deleted scene of them riffing on The Natural, because like, look, I love that movie. I watched it when I was 7, and it became a huge, big baseball movie for me. But I also know how ridiculous that movie is too, and I would love to hear an extended version of them just riffing on this movie, because it's ridiculous, right? It's an absolute silly movie. But I never really, until somebody just came out and said guilty pleasure, I don't think I ever realized you could maybe enjoy it that way. I don't know. It was very, very, it was like, I was like, oh, you put me in my place on this movie. I gotta think about this.
I think the writers have affection for that movie, and so like that's where it came from. But then I think it was exploring like actually how ridiculous the plot of that movie is. So it's like you can still enjoy it, but it's also like, it's kind of crazy town. That end of that movie with the music and all that, like it's so dramatic, which is like what you love. But then again, when you think about it, you're like, he's bleeding from a wound that was like how many years ago?
Yeah, it's like 30 years ago. I will specifically buy the Blu-ray of this movie if it has an extended scene of them riffing on The Natural on it.
There's so much stuff that I want to put together that's like riffing of this. There's a scene, my favorite scene, I'm lobbying for it, it got cut, but it's Mary and Betsy. So much improvising happened in that truck, and Mary and Betsy actually saw two cows having sex on the side of the road, and they improvised this whole scene about never seeing like a cow's vagina and asking if a cow had a clitoris. And like, it's like a 10-minute improvise about them really talking about it. And it's so funny. I tried to get it cut. It got cut, but I feel like I'm going to lobby for like, when this movie comes out, fans demand to see some of those.
Yes, I would totally see that.
I wanted to see her act out all of Twister. I was very sad that she started snoring immediately. I was like,
what's so great too is that they improvised the Twister thing, and that movie's actually shot in Oklahoma. So we're like, oh my gosh. Oklahoma now. Yeah.
Hey, how much of this was improvised? It seemed like, you know, like we said, they have a great chemistry together, the two leads, but It was there a lot with the rest of the cast, or did they pretty much stick to the script?
No, I mean, so, you know, I feel like with comedies in particular, and then for me having this many like just brilliant comedians and improvisers and writers, you'd be a fool not to, you know, have them pitch on jokes and elevate everything. So, you know, the script was great, and it's definitely the bones and most of the, you know, story is because of the script. But, you know, I took my pass and I kind of changed the end. Like there was Mary just won, I think, in the end of the original. And then once each character kind of came on board, it was also kind of like pivoting and talking with them, like Ron in particular. His character originally was, I think, more of a sleazeball that that ran the tournament. And Ron, when he came on, he's like, I'll play it however you want me to play it. But here's the thing. He's like, I feel like my character, his mom was an arm wrestler. He loves thick women. He loves powerful women. Now I'm just talking about myself. And I was like, okay, we're pivoting this character.
He definitely loves
it. Yeah. So it was, you know, so there was that kind of iteration. And then kind of how I worked with the actors was, you know, we would talk about scenes before we'd go into them, and we might change things there. We might change, you know, they were bumping on a line, or we kind of found the intention, or we kind of honed in on what something meant. So we would change it before we went into the scene. And then sometimes we would improvise in the scene, and there's lots of improvising, but it's, I guess, maybe not in the sense that you think just running wild. We would talk about it first and where we could improvise and what things we could move away from and what things we had to keep. And then there were certain scenes like the baseball scene with Mary and Eugene, that is actually completely improvised. Mary had, we kind of threw away what was written, because we're like, you know what, this idea that Mary had was so great, was, she kind of had this real fan. She's like, my real fantasy is like being, you know, standing against a fence. And I'm like, okay, don't tell Eugene. And so it was magic hour. We're like, let's just shoot this and see what happens. And it was just so real and authentic that that made the cut. But that scene in and of itself was completely improvised. So it was kind of a mix mash of stuff, but a lot of improvising and a lot of joke punch ups. My brother is a writer and he, you know, he was by my side a lot, like punching up jokes as well. So you just have a wealth of comedians and, you know, brilliant minds. So everybody was contributing.
Well, and I also appreciate the scene too, where the where someone at you know says Mary, I mean she tells Melanie, you don't have the balls to do this or whatever, or go out and get some balls or something like that. And there's a whole thing about how that's probably not even that's not even the a great it's not even a great thing to use anyway, because they're so like feeble and weak when it comes to getting hit or you know punched or anything like that. And they, there's that whole riff about flicking it and stuff like that. And it's like, no, you ruined your whole day with that.
A great scene in the sense of like, so the writers Jenna and Amory, that was like their baby. I think that was like one of their favorite scenes that they wrote, and it's so funny. It leaves out. And then kind of how it evolved a little bit was Ahmed's character Jerry. Yeah, he kind of becomes the foil in that scene. And that little moment about flicking it was improvised, like a Aparna, you know, a spider coming out of it. Like, so it was so great that the actors can kind of add and improvise and punch up. But it was like, you know, such a great scene that Amory and Jenna wrote about Labes Out.
did when she said that spider line, was that done in one take or did people just bust out?
I busted so like that. Like, I think we got it on one take. And so whatever, we didn't get it a bunch of times, but I had to get it in. So I think we actually ended up cutting around because it was a little hard to keep it in, but I was like, we have to keep that in that she saw a spider come out of one once.
what was your hardest day on set?
I mean, we have many hard days, but I do have to say probably my first, but one of the best was, you know, one of my big things is I didn't want to have to shoot green screen in the big rig. I was just like, if we have to shoot green screen, this movie will look cheap and it will just look low budget. So the compromise is that we strapped a big rig to a flatbed of another big rig, and we strapped cameras to that, and we just drove back and forth and for like many hours. It was Betsy, Mary, myself, and the incredible DP Chris sitting in the cab of that big rig, just driving back and forth and getting scenes. So there was so much improvising. I think we were going delirious with the heat. It was one of the most challenging days, but probably one of the funniest, most memorable days.
Jonathan Barrett.
Well, I did want to mention the arm wrestling scenes themselves. I was curious about shooting those. They were a lot of fun to watch. You mentioned over the top earlier. I was going to say that's a huge difference in this movie. I actually enjoyed watching the arm wrestling scenes. I'm also curious, like, were they fun to shoot? But also, like, was anybody really getting into it? Like, were people trying to win? And like, or was it?
I don't know. One, that was the big thing I think about this movie was talking with my DP Chris Messina. We wanted to make sure that they each looked different because it is so repetitive and it's like the same shots and the same moves. And there's not a lot of, you know, different dynamic positions that you're going to have in an arm wrestling match. So it was taking each arm wrestling match in each location and seeing how we could make each one different. So, you know, the opening one is in a dive bar where it's down and dirty and it's handheld and, you know, and compared to like the last one where we have like some, you know, steady cam work and we're moving around the circle of them. But, you know, one of the things we were really in particular is we wanted to be safe because you really can get injured arm wrestling. So, you know, it was really important that we have a stunt person. Again, Dot was a real arm wrestler. Amory knows arm wrestling. So one of the things that we did was we made sure that whoever was going to win the match was the one controlling the arms, because no one was really getting into the matches because there is an element of danger and you can get hurt and you can break something or you can twist something. So that was really important because we were moving so fast as well, was making sure that we had safety. So I'm glad that they looked real, but a lot of, you know, we definitely were coordinating that dance.
And by the way, especially during that training sequence and stuff, I felt like there was some foreshadowing in there that, you know, something was going to happen to an arm, and I don't want to give anything away, but that was perfect. Like the way you did that in the movie with, the injury, I guess we'll call it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
just them together in that scene was wonderful.
And you know what? That's another, those are other scenes that we had scripted, but we threw mm-hmm. a lot of the script because Dot, she really was kind of talking about arm wrestling. So a lot of it, you know, which was great. We had the bones of it, but then we'd be like, Dot, just go off and tell us. And so she would go off and tell us stuff about, you know, arm wrestling, and it made the cut because it's so authentic and real. And so a lot of that really does come from like the real life experiences that she had and Anne-Marie had.
That's cool. That strap thing seems super unfair. Like, I don't know how that's fair to anybody that would have to experience that.
Yeah. I mean, again, so much stuff I never heard about and learned, but it was so great that getting it in there in an organic way that felt real to like what she was doing of teaching them, and then kind of how things come back to play later that you've learned about.
Yeah. I don't want to say what the ending is, but I am curious because, I mean, I honestly didn't know how it was going to end, which I thought was really cool. Were there multiple ideas for that, or was it always pretty much what we got? Or,
well, you know what's so interesting about the end is, like, again, when I came on, I changed the end, so I added kind of the kind of surprise ending. That was something that when I came on, I was like, oh, we need one more extra thing, I think, just to again to make give homage to some of these sports tropes, but also kind of mm-hmm. do it in a fun, different way. So that was one of the things that I added. But there was also like kind of that second button at the end. One of the things, the original script, Mary's character, Melanie, ends up with the guy and she goes off with Eugene's character, and she goes off one way and Betsy goes off the other. That was the original script. But while we were shooting, it was very clear to me that we couldn't end the movie that way. We spent, you know, an hour and a half with these characters finding each other again and getting back on the road. And it was like, no, this is a movie about this friendship. So, you know, Mary can still get the guy in the end, but really it's like she can't lose her friendship. Mm-hmm. So that is actually something that we shot both ways. But when we got into the edit, I'm like, no, we have to keep Mary and Betsy together.
Mm-hmm. So you have a she ends up with Ducky ending is what you're saying.
She always ends up with, I mean, in my mind, I think like,
oh, that's true. Yeah.
He becomes part of her life. But there's a scene that we did shoot that's like, well, I'm going off this way and you're going off that way. And it's like, wow, she's just going to go off with this guy that she met this weekend. And so,
it was like, no,
we've spent all this time with Mary and Betsy. Like, they have to stay together. They have to continue their journey, whatever way that is.
By the way, I love how you handled the scene where she catches him possibly cheating on her, although that's not really what it is. But I just like that was just kind of, that was shoved under the rug pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think in a lot of movies that would have been like a, you know, 15 more minutes or something where they're, you know, they're still trying to get, you know, go through the motions with it. So I thought that was refreshing to see.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I mean, that was an interesting dance to play because it's like, how do you play it that feels authentic, that doesn't feel like she's kind of being crazy about it. And then like, you know, yeah. So it was, and that's a lot of Eugene and Mary, just kind of, they're set up actors and playing it in a really real way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. for sure.
Is there a scene in this movie that's your particular favorite, you find the funniest? Have we already mentioned it? Or is there another scene maybe that's not the funniest that is your favorite scene that you shot?
I mean, again, I don't think I've ever laughed as much as I've laughed doing this movie. So there's so many, like, just like hard laughing. One scene in particular that maybe like is just has a moment, but we shot more of it. And again, I'm going to lobby for like fans to like clamor for this, but the flashback of them in college.
we shot
like more stuff of that, and like it's just seeing them, Betsy as goth and Mary in her braces, is just so funny to me. So that scene, there's more on the cutting room floor that I would love to share with the world. But I think my favorite, looking back on it, and I think what encapsulates the movie to me, is the moment backstage between Mary and Betsy after kind of this incident happens in the end of the movie. Again, I don't want to give it away, but to me, it's like, I don't think you've ever seen it before in a movie, but it's laughing, it's crying, it's gagging. It's Mary and Betsy just like face to face, raw. And when we were shooting it, it was like, this is like a Lucy and Ethel moment of like, mm-hmm. you know, just these two just powerhouse comedians, like at the top of their game, at the top of their emotional, you know, it's so emotional. And to me, that's really what to me really signifies like how weird and complex this movie is and how it kind of strikes a tone of gagging, laughing, and crying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Do you guys have anything else?
Yeah, I want to say it's a fucking miracle whenever a movie gets made, right? I mean, you're talking about all this background, all this thought that you've put into this, all of the extra footage that you've shot, driving in the heat, setting up a camera on a big rig and all that shit. How does this even happen? Is it as much of a miracle as I'm imagining it is to actually make a movie?
No, I think it is a miracle. I mean, I think there are definitely moments along the way where you're like, is this going to happen? And, you know, the big rig in particular, I got to give a big shout out to our producer, Gita, because she basically, like, you know, I think at the last minute, she's like, okay, I can make it happen. And it was basically just bringing all of the people together that, you know, what's so great, my brother being in it, like, was so lovely because we drive to set and one day he was driving with me and he was just like, I just want to say, I'm so proud of you. He's like, I feel like we're making movies like we did when we were kids. And he's like, do you realize that all the people in this movie are people that you've kind of collected along the way and worked with other projects? And so this movie really does feel kind of like just the coming together of many people that I have worked with along the way on little, you know, commercials or short films, or I went to film school with Chris Messina, the DP, and Wendy, the production designer, did my first feature, and the AD Seth, he did this like ABC digital series with me, like people that like I just always wanted to work with again, bringing them all together. And it really did feel like bringing this weird band of people and finding cool people in Oklahoma, like our costume designers, Jack and Geneva. And so, yeah, I think it is a miracle, but it is almost like a kismet, just like when the stars align and you have all the right people together. You know, we had the time of our lives making this because it was just good people and we had fun.
That's certainly awesome. Seems that way. I mean, it's all the way through. Just I don't think there's I don't think there's a slow patch at all in this movie. And you know, and it almost devastates me to hear that you had to cut some things from this movie. Because, you know, you could have added another 5 to 10 minutes to this thing. It's no big deal.
Maybe when the director's cut will come out. I'll do my Zack Snyder like 4 hours.
Yes.
Yeah, I was gonna say
the Berucha cut.
We'll start everything. A hashtag today.
That's right.
I do have one more question because this is it's always interesting to me. The music in this movie.
Oh yeah.
Particularly the heart song, These Dreams. How do you, I assume some of this goes through the music supervisor, but how do you select what you're feeling in that moment? How do you place it in the perfect spots? How do you kind of, that song is almost like a thesis statement, right? Musically for their relationship.
Yeah.
How do you draw inspiration for those moments?
So, yeah, I mean, music is a big part of this movie and, you know, one, I got to give, you know, also, not only music, but the score. So Hannah Parrott, who did my score, she worked on a short film with me as well. Like, she just killed it with the score. And so that was kind of my base of, like, making sure we have an epic score for, like, our ending. And it feels very – it's a nod to the past, but also it feels fresh. So that was really important to me. And then the music in the movie, you know, I think originally Betsy – or Melanie and Danny's song was a Billy Joel song, the script. And I was like, you know what? I dig Billy Joel, but it feels like we need, like – again, not to like tell, but to show, we need like a female powerhouse song that's their song. And These Dreams was something that, like, I feel like we all know, we've all heard. It's a song that I sang as a kid, but also you don't really know the lyrics to, like, you know. So that, you know, that was something, again, that I added so for the script. And so that was even before we had a music supervisor, we like knew that we wanted that song in particular. So the producers really kind of went out and tried to get the rights to that song like before we were shooting so that we could shoot that and have it in the movie. Hmm. And then the other song that like was kind of my personal anthem while we were shooting was MIA's Yalla. The pump me up song that we would play on set. And that while we were in pre-production and kind of while I was doing my writing, like it was just like the song. And I remember telling Gita, and it's cool because me and Gita are both South Asian. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I would love to have like a South Asian artist, like MIA is like us. And so, you know, we knew it was a long shot, but I ended up writing her a letter and being like, please, can we have this? This has been kind of my anthem. And, you know, so I'm still grateful that song is in it. So those two songs were the ones that I really wanted in. And then we had an incredible music supervisor that came in and, you know, I temped the music out with songs that I had wanted. And she found such incredible music, Michelle, such incredible music to fill out the world with that she was so great to work with. And she really elevated the movie, I think, because sometimes it's hard to find music on our budget that you could use.
Yeah. You wrote MIA a letter. That is so awesome.
I actually wrote Nancy Wilson and her a letter, both of them being like,
oh, wow. That's awesome.
So those,
and apparently you're very convincing.
Well, that was the thing. It was like, I just really, those were the two songs that meant so much to me that I just really wanted them in the movie and did everything that I could to just to like really talk about how like they weren't just there because I liked them. They really had meaning to me, and they were really important that we get them in the movie.
Oh, that is awesome. Oh my God. Now that's not, you're not going to get that anywhere else. I guarantee you all the other interviews that you're going to do today, no one's going to ask that. And they're not going to get that story. Guaranteed. Well, Maureen, thank you so much for giving us your time today.
Thank you.
Appreciate you talking about this movie. It's very funny, and I recommend it to everybody who is who's listening right now to go out and watch it, because it's very, very funny. But that's going to do it for this interview. The movie comes out, Golden Arm comes out on in theaters and digital on April 30th. Definitely go see it. That's going to do it for this interview. It's Chris Atkinson, Jonathan Watkins, and Barrett Scher. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.